Oh man, one time in the backyard I was podcasting and my cat had dragged a chipmunk. I was like, oh, I can't let my cat kill a chipmunk. I got to get up and prevent this.
I know. It's kind of heartbreaking when I see a dead bird or rat's head on my doorstep, you know?
Well, chipmunks are, you know, they're if you have a problem with chipmunks or want to see them come to harm, there's something wrong with you.
There's something. My mom has a bumper sticker that says, I break for squirrels.
Uh-huh. That's what our Patreon members, we call squirrels, because the first year or so the squirrels would come up frequently and I would get distracted easily.
Jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym. Not jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym. With Rudy Tibersi.
What's up, everybody? Rudy here. My cat just got off my lap, so this is going to be flying by the seat of my pants. A couple things before we get to my conversation with Andy Andrist, who I was so stoked to have on the show. I have some shows coming up around the Greater Willamette Valley in the next week and a half or two. This Friday, February 9th, I'll be featuring for Tess Barker over at Swallowtail Spirits in Springfield, so check that out. And Thursday, February 22nd, I will be at the Garage in Albany, Oregon. And I think I was told I'll be performing with my very good friend Seth Milstein, who will be on a future episode. So check those shows out if you're in either of those areas. Chances are you're not, but if you are, I would love to see you. Yeah, if you ever want to reach out, feel free. Follow us on the gram at Jokes and the Gym. You can also email me at jokesandthegym@gmail.com. If you're looking for a little support in your workouts or anything like that, I am ready to roll, baby. I'd be super stoked to work with anybody who's serious about making a change in their life, because a lot of times people say they are and they're not. I'd love it if they were, but maybe they're not. But I'd love it if you were. So if you ever feel like you need a little push, you need some motivation, you need some knowledge, you need some workouts that aren't boring AF, then give me a ring-a-ding-ding-dong. You can contact me, Jokes and the Gym. Find us around. I'm also excited about my five-minute workouts that I've been doing. Ooh, baby, I am really excited about those, in fact. So check them out. They're on the Patreon. So without much further ado, I'm excited that Andy and I got to sit down and chat. That was super cool. Andy Andrist is a local legend. I've heard about him since I started doing stand-up, and that was when I was in Korea, actually. So to come back to Oregon and be able to chat with Andy and become friends is a really cool thing. So I'm just so excited about all the relationships that I get to grow, get to expand through comedy and through the gym and through working out, through the things that I love. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Andy Andrist. And I will tell you that he just got through cancer, and we get into the nitty-grits of it. So this conversation, he's also one of Doug Stanhope's unbookables. Doug Stanhope loves the guy, one of his best friends in the world, thinks he's the most hilarious dude he knows. So I was super pumped that Andy wanted to be on the show. And I'm super pumped that you're here listening. So thanks a lot and enjoy my conversation with the one and only Andy Andrist. All right, everybody. Well, welcome. Hello. I'm very excited about today's podcast. I've got a local legend with me today. As a Eugenian, I'm super stoked to have my guest on the pod today. He's got a few specials. The last one was on YouTube. It's called, what is that, Last Shot?
Last Shot, yep.
Last Shot. He's got a podcast called Issues with Andy. Everyone put your hands together for Andy freaking Andrist. Yeah, the crowd goes wild. How's it going, Andy?
Oh, great, great, great.
Nice.
Yeah, I almost lived up to that last shot was, you know, it meant something different before I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And it was like, oh, yeah, that was a good title for that.
It was pretty fitting.
Yeah.
So did you film it before? So for the audience who doesn't know.
It was right before the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
And then it just felt like, you know, driving home was a weird trip. My car, I made it in almost to Napa. I was trying to get to a Todd Snyder show in Arcata.
Okay.
I think I left Bisbee, Arizona, and my car burned up partway. I was in Napa for a minute or in that area, and there was a fire coming through there. Yeah. And then, you know, a few months later, the world changed in the pandemic world.
In a number of ways, yeah. And you also got a diagnosis, right? Did that happen?
Yeah. So I was like, this pandemic ain't shit. Let me make this worse I didn't mean to get it.
Damn. Okay.
And
well,
it was a cancer that you can't, like, a lot of times people will go, oh, liver cancer. Well, he drank a lot. I mean, there was cancers I deserved, or it would have been, you know, like, oh, I see how cause and effect.
Makes sense.
But nobody blows out their bile duct on purpose or by lifestyle.
You've been shitting with the best of them, Andy.
Yeah, yeah. So
it was a bile duct cancer?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, it was an early catch of pancreatic cancer, but my bile duct was plugged, so I would intermittently couldn't digest food, and I'm known as a drinker, but I've always thought of myself as a lightweight, because I would go, you know, I would go home and sober up, and then I would go on the road and drink too much.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I carried that all the time. But I became a real lightweight because I was in liver failure of sorts.
Yeah.
I got all jaundiced and everything. And it was like, well, I've never drank less and I'm turning yellow.
And I've never felt worse.
Those were the tip-offs.
So when did this happen? When did you find out about it? Was it like in the midst of 2020?
It was it was after that. It was 21, I believe. It was right around Halloween. I knew something was wrong year, and then I was just throwing up everything, like, you know, bite for bite, almost like I would throw up 30 times if I took 30 bites of something. It was it was like I was getting good abs.
Yeah.
You know, for a minute, you're like, well. You know, something's wrong with me, but I have, you know, got rid of that beer gut.
There's some benefits. Cool.
And then around Christmas that year, it was, you know, I was doing procedures and shit. Like, you know, I went from it going, you know, I went to a physician's assistant. I don't have a doctor, I have a physician's assistant. But he just fast-tracked everything. I went from, well, I don't feel very good. My stomach, you know, I called it my belly ache or what, you know, it's like, it didn't occur to me that it was probably something real serious. And then it just went to, you know, scans to, scopes to, and then the big surgery and, it's out for the moment.
Nice.
This is about fitness and kind of my fitness goals are just, you know, to be in shape if the shit comes back again. Cause I may try to outrun it, or my plan also is to get kind of involved in windsuit jumps, but not really. I'm shitty at listening to directions, so I think nature will take its course. I just get a windsuit, show up. This guy gave me a bunch of instructions, but I wrote them down somewhere. Let me just jump and see how this goes. And then maybe, you know, you just scare cancer out.
You got the squirrel suit. You're good to go. You know.
Yeah, it looks. It looks like one of those things that looks like, you know, I might be able to do that. That's like, you know,
it's caked. You see those Scandinavians flying through the air, and you're like, oh, that's easy. Yeah, just flying over rocks and trees.
Yeah, and then you know, oh well, there he goes. He's trying to thread the needle, and it was his first jump. And
it's like, nope. No needles to thread.
Yeah, I guess that's my plan if it, you know, comes back. It's just, I mean, I'm trying to, I don't want to be like, you know, on my back with it, you know, as if it's going to be the end kick. I want to have some cool adventures on the way out. You know, windsuit will be the third thing.
Yeah, the joke always lands the best, like on the third punchline. So,
right, right.
you'll start a couple more simple ways, and then you'll be like, no, yeah, it was always windsuit.
Right. It turns out, what do they call that? That real lame one where you cable, you know.
Zip line.
Yeah. It turns out the zip line didn't kill him.
The zip line was weak, and then he climbed a ladder. I don't know what he was thinking there, but.
Right. Yeah, zip lining would be a lame, you know, that'd be a lot. It'd have to be a lawsuit.
it looks so stupid. Zip line? Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been to Vegas in the Fremont experience?
Actually, I haven't been to Vegas. Okay,
well, that's where it would be like, that may be the lamest place. And people, every time I'm there, somebody's like, you know, tries to get me to do it with them. It's like, no, I'm sorry, I've seen this.
This doesn't.
You get stuck up there, you're towing yourself back, and it's, but anyway,
some kind of giddy up on some zip line where some guy helps you and is on your back,
right? Yep. A dude comes out, and and then you're, you know, you get the slow cable of shame across other tourists going, yeah, I'm glad I didn't do that.
It's like, oh, look at that dead guy.
I'm glad
there,
I just did LSD and thought about jumping off of a ledge.
That's a better Vegas. I think that's lot of people's Vegas experience.
Yeah, that's probably more the way I would go out in Vegas.
Yeah,
that looked pretty good when I heard about it. Those thoughts did enter my mind. I know this. Doug Stanhope, years ago, had this desert party in Death Valley, and I've since been back with our podcast has done it a few years. It's just been like 4 days there or so in this little resort. It's not, you know, and resort
in
is
Bisbee?
A strong word. What's that?
In Bisbee?
No, this is called Panamint Springs. It's like, you know, right by the lowest point in America, the hottest weather and all that. It's a weird, you know, stretch of, you know, Death Valley is definitely worth a road trip, through at some point. Yeah. That's where the Manson family, chilled for a while.
That makes sense. Right.
Near so there's this place in, I went hiking with my brother. He went 1 year, and this place is called Panamint City, but it's a washed out, it was a gold rush town for a minute, mineral rush or whatever, and it went boom real quick and bust almost as quick, and but it had outlaws and whores and little dugout spaces that people would just lay with their weapons over their chest, and so we went up to that place, and there's some mining caves. We walked into one, and you get to a split in the road, and there's one way. My brother knew that there's water in a cabin. You can go there, and if you make it to that, you know, you're okay.
You're doing okay.
We didn't know which way to go, and we were, it's like, you know,
there's a cabin out there somewhere.
Yeah, we made it up. It's way up in the mountain, so it's like a hard stretch to get there. There's no road and hiking through trails and stuff. But we got to a split, and we're like, neither of us had water. We're like, you know, undersupplied, and like, this might be it right here.
Yeah.
So automatically I think of that place. I think about, you know, that 50-50 split of we're in trouble here, man. It's really hot. We're dehydrated. And if we keep going, and we went left, and that's where this place is. But we walked into this cave, and we just kept going. And you could, until the light from the entrance was disappearing, like a flickering, you know, like a bulb burning out. And the air was getting real. We were going to smoke a joint. It's like, I think we might die if we, you know,
inhaled.
We don't head back.
Yeah.
So that's when I thought about when I got the cancer, it's like, maybe if I just could dry, you know, because I'm thinking of like an Irish goodbye.
Yeah.
You know,
I love a
maybe
good one.
Tip my kid off. It's a bummer, you know, see you on the other side. I wouldn't want to leave her, you know, like, where did he go or whatever. But that was a thought. And then my kid puts me on blast because we need money. Oh, and, you know, so I went from thinking about, you know, just a quick exit, you know, and going to this cave. It's, you know.
Yeah. Was it like cool?
Yeah. It's an interesting place. There's, you know, there's still a lot of structures.
Yeah.
And it just has that air of something bad happened here.
You're like, and oh, yeah.
Like the, I couldn't, like, there's different stories on whether there was a lot of people there or nobody was there when the town got washed away. But I think there was people living there.
Yeah.
And got washed and buried in the rubble, but a lot of the building, you know, in a flood in the mountains, which, you know, God's out to get you.
He's after something in the mountains. Yeah.
You're going to flood right there.
You're going to pay the piper. So right, you found the cabin.
Guys. Yeah. Not the Manson cabin, but yeah, we found the cabin, and in that cabin was just what you'd need if you, hit, like we did. It's like, yeah, there's, Tylenol for some reason. We need to it's like, we're just, we're trashed. And we got there. Yeah, there's running water, a pillow that, it's like, I'd have to be a little more worn down to put my head on that pillow, but, just a cot. But that was there was one cabin like that. And then everything else was nothing.
Yeah.
I figured out where the whorehouse was just by smell or instinct. And I may be wrong on it. A historian could prove me wrong, but I was like, this has got to be the whorehouse.
This is for the ladies and the fellas. Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Prime cat house space.
Yeah, nice space,
Yeah. nice. I love it. So are you someone who would go on a hike? Are you a person who'd, go out there?
To say I did was a marathoner is a lie, but I completed in none of them. I did.
I'm not here for that.
Yeah, my brother years ago, probably in my 30s, got me to go do the Big Sur marathon with him.
Yeah,
which is really, if you know Highway 1, it's a beautiful run. You're on these epic bridges and. Mm-hmm. And all that. And I wasn't anywhere. I shouldn't, it was an insult to other marathoners that I was allowed to enter.
Yeah.
But I did finish it with, an eclectic group of, like you would do a WB sitcom with the people around me. Oh, black lady in a knee brace, a wheelchair coming in. And
yeah,
it wasn't the most, the top group, but I did that one. And then I did it. I went another year. And my brother and me were going to do it a few years later, and he couldn't make it. So I talked another comic, Bent Washburn, into doing it to get the, I need the shirt, just enter and get the shirt. I told him there'd be no problem when you just go do it and quit
easy.
When you need to,
Yeah.
And it's no big deal. There's a car to give you, which I didn't. That's a lie. There's not really a car
there's
to whisk quitters
like
off. but I talked him into doing it. And then I fucked with that year. I just thought it was funny as I to go up. I was with the Bent, so he was like, he wasn't a serious runner.
Yeah.
And I wasn't necessarily, and my brother not being there kind of bummed me out. So I was had a cigarette. And a lighter, and I was drinking a beer, and I was up with the front runners. Have you ever seen how a marathon lines up? There's some real serious dudes in front.
Oh yeah.
And I would go, hey man, I was hanging with them, and I go, you got a light for this shit? And they do not like it. they tell you to get out of that area, And then I was talking.
They didn't
shit,
like it.
Yeah, I was drinking beer, and they're like, get the fuck out of here, man. And I go, okay, man. I go, you're going to see me when that gun goes off. You better get a good look at me because I'm going to disappear into the fucking horizon. And it was just the opposite of that.
Me and this silver bullet.
Yeah. I'll be smoking your face all the way.
You said you weren't there for the competition, but it sounds like you were, Andres.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned that's at the Big Sur Marathon is because I didn't, I needed to pee, I was drinking a lot of fluids before it, which maybe isn't the best thing, ease into it or whatever. But I was with the group that had to stop and pee a lot.
Yeah.
But that became, I was like, go up into the brush and there were women squatting and peeing all around. So I was like, yeah, maybe
I'll take the next bush.
Here.
Yeah.
But anyway, my friend Bent, he did about 5 miles, and we're at this this point, and he goes, I can't run anymore. And I go, that's cool, man. And then I announced to, I go, hey, you know, it's just like people running by. I go, I'd like to announce this year's first quitter of the Big Sur Marathon.
Bent.
I did that. So I completed that one. But I suck at them. Like I did the Eugene Marathon twice.
Oh, damn.
Two. And then that ain't that cool of a course or anything. I physically broke down on the, it was the second Big Sur Marathon, an old man, and he probably looks about like I do now. But yeah. It was like running, and I felt like I was all right, but I'd been neglecting the water stations for a while and getting wobbly and shit.
You had your Bud Light.
I know. I started it off with so much promise, ended, and all those assholes who in front probably knew where I would end up. But this old dude goes, at the end of it, you know, I'm feeling pretty good. You know, they've just slung a medal on me, or maybe this was even the guy who slung the thing over my neck, said, you should head to the medical tent. And I was like, no, I'm all right or whatever. And then I went to the medical tent, and they put me on a thing and pumped me. You know, I got saline bags and, you know, massage and everything.
Got the juices in you. I must have looked
pretty, close to dead coming in there.
And so did you keep going after that? Or is that just like, no, he's in the medical tent, he's done.
That was the end of the, that was the end of that marathon. This is how good a shape I'm in for marathons is the next one I did, the Eugene Marathon, a paramedic that came from out of town just happened to be in stride with me for a minute and looked me over and said, you know, it's just kind of hung with me. He could have easily finished a way before that, but he just felt, as a paramedic, I can't leave this guy. And he sniffed me a couple of times and he told me I was checking to see if you smelled like ammonia. Cause I guess that's a bad sign,
Andy.
I mercifully gave up on, you know, marathons.
He's like, I swore an oath, and this guy is that oath.
Yeah. I saw him afterwards. I appreciated it, but it's like, you know, it occurs to me that, you know, you either train for these things or you don't. Uh-huh. You don't just show up on a marathon day with, you know, longest training run being a 5 or 6 miler. You know, you really got to do a certain things. Some training, so obviously you would know that that's a bad strategy for a marathon is to
show up for miles? The shirt.
26.2.
Well, that seems dumb. And I don't love running. Why did you do it?
I don't. Why my brother got me into that first one. I don't know why I went back, because the first Big Sur on finishing, you know, before you get to a part where you can't strike the road even. So it's like your legs are tore up, and then you get to these kind of rolling things coming in, I think, Carmel. And I was like almost crying. And then I don't know why it wasn't cleaned up, but there was like a feral hog that's in the area, like a warthog or something that had been chasing hit and dragged. And the corpse was up, you know, on the side of the road, and then blood, blood trail coming from whatever struck it. And that's where I was like, I think that was like at 25 point something. So it's like I was out of my mind at that point in pain. And then I see a dead hog. And then all I wanted was alcohol and then end up in a medical tent.
A dead hog. What a great way to welcome runners to the finish line.
Yeah. Maybe they left it there. There must've been some cruel funniness, but that marathon too, that year there, I saw a guy who was dying on the side of the road. There was a thing going on. And I could, you know, there's like I took a picture in my mind and I thought about, you know, it was back in the days. Maybe I had a little camera with me. It wasn't my phone, but so it was like, you know, there wasn't 100 cameras around this guy. Yeah. And I could see there was some, you know, trauma or drama going on around this guy. And they were getting ready to hit him with a needle.
Yeah,
there was somebody putting the needle on. I ran by that, and I could see. And then you get stuck with people in a marathon. Sometimes you just can't break away from them, or it takes effort. You know,
yeah.
I was with these two Karens, I'll call them now, but they were going on about the guy looked fat. You know, we just saw it didn't, we didn't know he died.
Yeah.
Or was dying, but it was like, it looked bad. And they were going, you know, they're talking about how he probably didn't train and he had new shoes on and all this shit. Jeez. And then they just flipped right into talking about recipes and stuff. And I you know, I don't know that I beat him in the marathon, but I know eventually I got tired of listening to their shit and strided in front of them.
Yeah.
But the guy died. And the point of the place that he died was called, I think it's Hurricane, they call it Hurricane Ridge or something like that.
Yeah.
And when you go in to sign up for the marathon, there were shirts there, and they weren't like the official marathon shirt, but they were like shirts that say, I survived Hurricane Ridge. And to me, that's what I wanted. I wanted to know, did he buy me? He didn't get roped into my shirt and then have somebody go, sorry.
This is your funeral shirt, buddy.
Yeah, he can't wear this.
That was on the Warthog race. That was on the same run.
Yeah, he that's didn't traumatic. Make it, he didn't get to see that Warthog. He didn't make it to the piano bridge.
My gosh. That was
marathoning is a cruel thing, and kind of that was another thing I got into running to get into. At least to tolerate my lifestyle on the road, you know, and it was always something you could do on the road.
Yep.
And it's good to get away from a bar, you know, to be swift of foot.
Oh, sometimes. Yeah. Like, when you were
anything, officer, there's back there.
When you were on the road, would you go out for runs and stuff in a
town?
There was
a time, yeah, I was even working with Stanhope on the road on, and I remember doing some like one-sided runs or, you know, drop me.
Yeah,
you know, 10 miles outside of town. Not much. Then I would get, you know, a couple of days of drinking, and then it just wasn't
happening. But I think the trick is to do it on the first couple of days when you're out on the road, so you have the energy, and it's like, okay, I can kind of chill for the next couple of days.
I know a lot of comics that are successful, like good runners, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just never felt good on my legs.
It's not a good thing, you know. It shakes up the whole body.
It's so much pressure, it's so much impact.
Mm-hmm. Joint. Yeah. I could probably carry it off better now. I stopped running a long time ago. I mean, before cancer, and then certainly since then, it's like it just feels kind of off to run. I guess your gallbladder swings for you. I don't know. Missing my gallbladder is like throwing my whole fucking thing off.
Your whole, who knew?
But, you know, walking and stuff, do that. That's my,
you get your stretches in, man, stretching.
Yeah, I should do more of it, but I'm pretty, you know, I'm not, I can reach down and touch the floor and shit like that. So I'm not like, I feel like yoga, everything I hear about yoga, and meditation and stuff like that seems like beneficial, but then it's like, well, absolutely. I almost died of cancer, so should I really worry about self-improvement? I'm not almost died, I guess I just got faced with it, got surgery. Almost dying would be a few more stages, I guess.
Yeah, where the doctor's like, I'm glad you came in now. Were you like
right
towards the worst part, or did they catch it at the
They
good
said
spot.
It was an early catch, you know.
Oh, well, that's great.
And then the chemotherapy is what really, you know, it's where I was like, you know, I've kind of recovered from the surgery. It took a while. It hurt, you know, fuck, it really hurt.
Yeah, I bet.
And, but then the chemotherapy was just like, it's just an, I was thinking of an analogy like football. It's like being on a shitty football team and you start midfield and they just keep jamming you back.
Yeah.
Almost like that. You know, you get kind of, you know, you get, you go in and do that treatment.
Yeah.
And I'd carry it home with me. So it'd ride on me for a couple of days. It was all this procedure. I'd go in and get this bag removed. I'd start feeling good for a couple of days, you know, a few days removed from that. 3 days, I was like, you know, felt all right, and then go back. And then each time you'd get shoved back further.
Right.
And then it was really messed you up. So I didn't realize how much that was a setback. That's what I'm sure people go, once is enough on that, or, you know.
Yeah.
I'll see, you know. That'd be a definite conversation. Last time I felt like I got bullied into it.
Yeah.
Like chemo.
Into chemo?
You know? Yeah. Well, not... It was presented to me as like, I don't have a long life expectancy anyway. You know, that's what this guy told me. Like, you're 5 years. He wrote on a board, like, 5 years, my first visit.
Yeah.
And I go, and he goes, that's how long, you know, from average, anyone with your diagnosis. Hey, so I was like, yeah. I think that was a sales pitch for chemo.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I'm already in, you know, I'm already kind of feeling like, you know, like my daughter knows about this. If I don't get chemo, she'll feel like I didn't make an effort or whatever.
Yeah.
But there is a, you know, I was like, well, you got it early. The surgeon went in and removed it. So chemotherapy is just this follow-up. They always, almost always do. Mm-hmm. And it almost kills you.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's almost worth writing out if the, you know, go, how do you feel about it, surgeon? But there is even a little bit in there.
Uh-huh.
Then you're, you know, you're, it begins the end.
It's but, poison, right? You're just getting pumped full of poison.
So I would get, they would mix it. They would, you go in and do lab work, and then they read your lab work, and then that tells them which concoction. So then, like, it goes to the bar, you know, vodka cranberry with a splash of this or whatever, all these chemicals. And it, like I said, each time it kind of got worse, and the neuropathy would get worse and stuff, and you get weaker or more sickly. It's kind of like being a junkie.
Yeah.
You know, you just kind of get sick and weaker, but you don't really notice it because it's incrementally. And then I was sitting in the chair one day, and I never talked to anybody, and it was during the COVID too. So there was, everybody was masked.
Yeah.
This one lady came in, and they were, the nurse was talking to her, and she just had the same surgery I had and was real tentative about the chemo.
Uh-huh.
And when I had a minute, I go, I'm almost at the end of this thing, and it sucks, but it's not that bad. And 10 minutes later, my head turned purple and I fucking flopping and dragged myself up, and you know, I had to take my cart and the nurses see what's going on, and I go into the bathroom. I'm just about ready to fall down and shit. And it becomes this medical emergency, and it was
like, it's not so bad.
It's not so bad. Nothing to worry about here.
You'll be fine. Yeah,
it's like, why, it must have been like watching somebody get electrocuted, because I was like sweating and purple and dragged that thing, and I made it into the bathroom and hit the wall, and they're like, you know, got me down, but it was all this shit that I'd taken, for 11 visits, you know, just to that point where my body would
no more,
regurgitated it and rejected the chemical and almost killed me in the fucking chair.
And they're like, that's the sweet spot. So then, that's where we want him.
So then they go, you get, you know, you're getting an extra week off.
Yeah.
So it's like, I got an extra week off, and then brace for it to be rough again. And then, but they backed off of one of the elements that nearly, you know, was too much for my body to take anymore. But that's a push you to that edge of almost, you know, it's got to kill everything almost inside of you, but not quite.
It's like Roundup. Start
killing. Yeah, it's like spraying Roundup.
Yeah, it's just on
waiting
your...
for that class action lawsuit against big chemo.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I was subjected to that shit. Sat in there.
It's like, I already had the cancer, so I don't know what the lawsuit's going to be for.
Right. Yeah, I was at Camp Lejeune and this shit. I got sprayed in the bioduct.
Yeah. Were you at Camp Lejeune in 1982?
I went to Camp Lejeune water camp.
Yeah, I was just drinking straight from the tap, LJ.
Yeah, and then after I would get done at Camp Lejeune, then I would go put talcum powder on me and spray Roundup in the yard.
Yeah.
Roundup would be a good, you know. I did I entered the Camp Lejeune one because I had a cancer. I think the cancer from Camp Lejeune is one that I had.
Oh.
Roundup. I don't fit into that one, but it's like, but the camp, I actually got phone calls from lawyers from camp, you know, the camp lawsuit.
So you really,
you know, well, I mean, you know how those work from what you probably watch Better Call Saul. So it's just this big, you know, net they're throwing out, and they want me, you know, they want me to die of the cancer and have connection to the camp so they can, you know, add to the numbers or whatever. But I could, you know, I couldn't even come up with a picture where I'm dressed like an army guy.
Yeah,
I was there. I swear to God, there's no documentation of it. Well, I was kidnapped and taken to Camp Lejeune and raped by a priest.
Not which so is there's another lawsuit.
Yeah, that's another lawsuit.
Were you in the military?
Every religion but the one I've got has got a lawsuit. And yeah. I was in the Boy Scouts, and I didn't get sexually abused in the Boy Scouts.
Oh, you like, poor bummer. Thing. Yeah,
missing a lot of lots of gold out there.
Yeah. You should definitely be capitalizing on your near-death experiences and your traumatic events in your life. That's what it's all about, right? If you can't make money from trauma, then what are you doing?
Right. Well, it you know, I got a lot of pity money. It's like you think you know, that's a tough way to go. Oh, people don't like me at all. You know, it's like I didn't. You know, I would have never done it. My daughter put it out there, and I had I was already into the process and couldn't worry about it, any of that stuff, but it would have been a real bummer had it not, you know, it's a bummer to get, I mean, it feels weird to accept all this gratuity. And a lot of times it was people I don't know, sometimes anonymous donors or whatever. And it, you know, it makes you feel good, but it's also makes you feel bad because the healthcare system sucks and we all have to put a fucking pot out when we have something like that, or, you know, or rely on others.
Many comics, that's almost every comic you see who gets sick or injured or whatever. They're like, sorry. It's like, I'm just
enjoyed
asking
your show. Me. Sorry. You got hit by a car afterwards.
Yeah.
Here's literally. $20.
It's like that.
Hope you get better.
Yeah.
And I got, you know, I got a bunch of those and, you know,
that's nice.
It was fairly, you know, profitable.
There you go. I need to look into that. I'm trying to find work.
Yeah. Spray some Roundup around.
Yeah, I live in a yard.
Cancer's probably easy to cut. You know, it's like that episode of South Park where Randy put his nuts in the microwave. It's just that easy, you know.
Yeah.
Put on sunscreen, drink Mountain Dew, smoke some filtered cigarettes.
And
you'll find you.
You'll get something, yeah.
Yeah, go to the ocean, have seafood. It might be plastic in there.
It might be seafood. It might be your tap water. It might be the type of clothes you wear. It's so much bullshit.
From what I understand, a bioduct is like the size of a needle pin, and mine got plugged.
Oh,
so that's pretty easy. That's like, you know, you're a caramel sundae away from inadvertently causing cancer.
So could you not, were you like, could you not go to the bathroom or what?
No. After surgery, there's a bit of that. But no, I would just throw everything up. I couldn't really digest food. And, you know, and then it got to a point where it was like ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, well, maybe drink some, you know, go to Jamba Juice and get those for, you know, just kind of work around it or whatever. But it's like, you know, it's like a car. You keep driving it when it's shooting smoke out or whatever. So I guess if I got to be grateful for anything that I got to hang out and maybe see a second Trump term or whatever. I went to the physician's assistant when I did, because I think sometimes doctors don't fast track shit because they want to, you know, well, let me know how they, you know, they give you something. This guy knew, he said right away, I'll probably lose my gallbladder just on what was going on with symptoms. And, you know, I don't think he was surprised at all to hear I had pancreatic cancer, you know, but he was just going on what I was telling him was going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, 2 days later, 3 days later, I was getting a C scan.
Damn. So that happened in the thick of the pandemic, right? And before were you still like on the road, were you still doing stuff
now? I mean, you know, I'd been off of it for a bit, and then I set up some stuff half-assed to record. My friend Sean Rouse died, and that bummed me out, and he was trying to record, and he had this great bunch of material, and he recorded, and I guess that didn't go well. You know, people have heard it and said it's not, you know, anyway, it's, you know, maybe not even a good rough draft. He was just, you know, it was a rough show or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he didn't hit the beats. But
I'd
worked with him on the road and saw this really great, you know, it was like so dark and so funny, like Sean. And, and so when that, he didn't, you know, get to the finish line on his other thing. I was just thinking about that, and I asked Stanhope one night. I go, you know, it's just like was more of a thinking, you know, maybe I kind of had an inkling something bad was on the horizon. Mm-hmm. But I just like, even though I hadn't been on the road a bunch, I just wanted to get, you know, some, you know, a recording of something, you know, the, mm-hmm. the previous one was in the unbookables when it was right. not much of a representation of anything except for the drunkenness.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was a CD many years before that, which, you know, it's, I, you know, considering that those were feature sets that were cobbled together and, yeah. and all that, yeah. I wasn't, you know, displeased with how that one was, but nice. It's just like, it'd been a long time and my friend just died. So mm-hmm. I recorded that. And then that, like I said, that's right before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I wanted a few more weeks. I liked the material I was working on there. I just feel like I needed to get the chops to go through yeah. some. I had some real hit and miss shows beforehand, and that'll mess you up. I had the Velveeta room in Austin
mm-hmm.
is connected to like Hello Dollies or something, like a mystery theater type of show.
Okay.
Audience participation, where they leave their seats and follow the actors out to the sidewalk at times.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that show yeah. breaks up. It's connected to the other building, so they send the tourist or the people that just saw that over to see me, and I don't have anything like Dolly's Cavalcade or nothing. And it seemed like one of those, like a setup almost, like
yeah.
there was, like, you know, it's a real small room and there was not many people showed up for me.
Yeah.
There's two Asian of Taiwanese guys, the two brothers, and one was running analytics on me against my will. But and then there were these empty seats that would fill up with, one time it was six old cowboys.
Okay.
And they get up and leave. I was like, yeah. what is going on here? And then six great, you know, and then it was like, whatever was happening next door, you know, the first people to leave, oh, you
and
keep your evening going next door here. And they'd go in and then I would ruin their evening, like, yeah. you know, in 1 or 2 minutes.
This isn't
like,
what we know. Wanted.
Yeah, it, not at all, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody gave me, so I needed money for this thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize I needed to pay in camera crew. And so Paul Provenza actually, I dragged him in to direct it.
Nice.
And he's like, you know, calls me while I'm on this road trip that I need to raise money for camera shit, you know. So I did I played my GoFundMe fucking, I got cancer before that. Go, yeah. man, here's what happened. And I need money for, and people pitched into that.
Yeah.
And this one guy, before I asked people for that, gave me a bunch of money. So then oh, I yeah. had like money on top. It's like, I already made this thing. If you ask people for the thing, and then I got extra money. So I was like, well, now I'm going to go down to Corpus Christi and drink a little bit and try to get my head right for this set and mm-hmm. everything. And it just did not work out. You know, I mean, I'm a harsher critic, but it's just like every, you know, there's just, you know, so many specials out, and I know what I was trying to get at the material. And I know I only got mm-hmm. to the entryway of some of it. And, yeah. you know,
I did the same. I recorded in February of this year, put it mm-hmm. out in June on the shoestring budgets, calling on friends, mm-hmm. all of that stuff. It's like, and some of the hardest part is like getting to it in the place you want to be. Cause mm-hmm. it's like, okay, how many shows do I have booked? How many hours can I do beforehand? How many decent rooms can I do before this? And it's
right.
it's never what you want. I wanted to do 50 shows. I did like 12, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And, yeah. So I, you know, I mean, I had the friendly confines of where I taped,
mm-hmm.
but I had the enemy of not, you know, knowing what I'm doing
mm-hmm.
completely, you know, and,
it turned out good. I mean, it's not a bad special, right?
Yeah. You know, and it's like like I was saying about the cancer GoFundMe, where mm-hmm. you're watching numbers and stuff. And you get, I was on 800-pound gorilla,
mm-hmm.
so, and they put it out, and then you do this. Hey, you know, I'm putting it out in a live thing or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and it feels cool, and you know, the numbers build and stuff, and then when somebody else puts something out. you move down, and then when you move down, and then if you don't keep the numbers up, then you drop way down, and then you might as well not look at the numbers anymore because they don't move at all unless somebody specifically clicks your thing in. You know, it's buried in the jukebox, but you know.
Mine hasn't moved in months. The number has been right.
And it's like kind of a bummer, but it's like, man, there's just so many ways to consume all that, you know.
I was stoked that I got in. I'm around 8,000. I'm like, I know people who get triple digits as far as, you know, when they put out their self-produced specials. So it's like, you know, I'm just putting something out there because this is where my head is. It's like,
yeah.
If I die tomorrow, there will be proof that I was alive and I was a comedian.
Right, until the climate disasters to sweep away our ability to view anything.
Yeah, until the algorithm overlords get taken away from us as well.
Doesn't it feel like it's just like, oh, it's like coming soon?
Do you think it is? I mean,
I don't know. This is a long story, but I'll try to keep it short as I can. Paul Provenza years ago. I went to Florida to get revenge. I was molested as a kid. Went to Florida. I found the dude. It tormented me when I worked with Doug. We talked about it in a joking way, but also like Doug would do some sleuthing on. Anyway, one day he found him. I watched him from afar, you know, internet wise, but he, you know, kind of hidden. But anyway, I went to Florida, confronted him. And filmed it as revenge because he used to film me, this guy.
Oh, fuck.
And anyway, the whole thing kind of fell together in a weird, revengeful way.
Yeah.
I had some footage. Paul Provenza thought it sounded like something that would be, you know, an interesting story to tell.
Yeah.
This is 10 or 11 years ago all this happened. And two days ago. Yeah, the whole Florida thing, and then I got went and confronted the pedophile. So he sat across from me, and Doug Stanhope was there, and we grilled him, and I got him to basically, you know, publicly, well, he apologized on hidden camera publicly, because that was the Florida courts decided that, you know, what I did was legal. It was in a real gray area, you know, and we didn't really know. The lawyer we had was, he was either way, you know.
Yeah,
he knew it was a gray area and he was hands off, but you know, when he needed to be, he was there. But so that was decided it was okay, and that was a big win. Anyway, all this time, you know, Provenza's been working on this story about me, you know, or on and off, you know, long periods, 11 years. And so 2 days ago, he sends me a message. And we don't talk about it that much anymore. Mm-hmm. I know it's been moving a little bit, but you know, it's 11 years. And so he shows me a draft of it and he's getting ready to, you know, so it's like, really? You know, okay, well, I guess I'll put in some effort into stuff or whatever, but it's just, it's kind of a, you know, it's a weird story, you know?
So he's working with the footage of it right now.
He's done well. He's got a finally, after, you know, for years, he's, you know, it's like, where are you at on that, Paul? Or, you know, I just stopped asking a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, assuming he wasn't really. And then I thought I did see a draft of it a few years ago. And it seemed like it was pretty, you know, but it was like all old footage. So I suggested, let's do, you know, like a green room show. Which we did. We did a backyard green room with, you know, Doug and Annie Letterman and Henry Phillips.
Nice.
That just kind of jumped the move, you know, went from the end of it to 10 years later. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, instead of looking not too old, then I'm like, oh, fuck. I was at the peak of, at the wave of not really that good looking, but getting uglier. And then it's just like seeing it go, oh, okay, here we go.
You were still running marathons at that point.
Yeah. I was still kind of, you know, it's the tail end of it, but I was still, still lean enough.
Yeah.
I like to look like I still run marathons, maybe.
Yeah, you got that sunken face going
cancer,
on.
I got cancer lean, but I might be a vegan as well.
Yeah. This guy's pretty. You look plant-based, Andy.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely had some soy sausage.
Well, that's so, I mean, that's exciting for me to hear about, because the first time I heard about you was when I lived overseas. I lived in Korea, and a friend of mine from Winnipeg, he's like, oh my God, you're from Eugene? Andrist is from Eugene. And he told me about that story because he knew that you and Doug went to confront him. He's this giant guy from Winnipeg, awesome guy, Jeff Sinclair. He came to my special.
Okay, yeah.
From Canada. And so he's just like salt of the earth, great guy. But he was totally into you, your story, and your comedy. So yeah, that... when I come back to Eugene, I'm like, oh, shit, Andy Andrist is here. And it was always so cool to see you at the shows with Billy Wayne and that kind of stuff. And yeah, so it's good to hear that you're doing something with it.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was almost a bluff. I mean, mm-hmm. it really felt like, I mean, I went to the Cape Fear Comedy Festival. Yeah. And my intention was just to go down there, one man, swim a moat.
Yeah.
And put a camera on this, like I was deranged, after the Sandusky thing just kind of re-triggered a bunch of old stuff. And I was like, I kind of want to fucking do this before it's too late.
Yeah.
So, so it was quite an adventure, but it was a court case in Florida and it really got, I mean, we fed the reporter was on our side. Mm-hmm. It was a cool, vengeful article to have written. It was like, oh, they mentioned my penis. It's going to be on his neighbor's porches. Yeah. You know, we're linked. It was the ultimate fuckover right there.
Yeah.
And then a week or two later, I get contacted by a reporter in Eugene. Mm-hmm. And he picked up on that story and he wanted to interview me. And I try to be clever with him. Mm-hmm. And we went to the paddock bar and Chris Castles was with me and we set up a hidden camera because I didn't want the same article that was in Florida to be on my neighbor's porches about my penis being touched by a handicapped guy in 1978. Yeah. I wanted it to be about hidden cameras and the right to, you know, and I showed that reporter, you know, after a few questions and the article he wrote so they'll do the Friday, they'll tell you what's coming up on the weekend. Mm-hmm. So there's my head and comic unfunny business and then it's in the Saturday paper. And then the Saturday paper is kind of a bummer. I mean, it was very sympathetic to the perpetrator or the guy I confronted. In fact, he quoted the attorneys for that guy, and it kind of made it sound like I might be an extortionist. And this was written by a Eugene guy.
A registered guard guy?
Yeah, he was, and now he's with another thing. And, I don't know. It's just
shitty.
The article, and I don't go to church. I didn't, I don't anymore, but I'd go to the Episcopal church occasionally. Mm-hmm. And people from the congregation would come up and say stuff. You know, like, it was... Yeah. It was written in a way that people didn't know me were upset by the slant of the article.
Yeah.
He mentioned I was getting my second Bloody Mary. And, but he was just, he seemed really pissed off when I said, there's a hidden camera on you. And then he was like, oh, wow. I guess when you fucking try to control the press, it might backfire.
Yeah.
And he got a lot of negativity from it, from that article though.
So it didn't go like he planned.
What's that?
It didn't go like he planned.
Yeah, yeah. He was, he was an entertainment. So it was like in the A&E, but the whole thing was basically a bluff. And in my mind, I didn't think Provenza would ever follow through. I just told that guy I was making a film about us.
Yeah.
I said that in the confrontation with him.
Uh-huh.
And it's the ultimate revenge because Provenza is a slow worker.
Yeah.
So this guy's been like, probably nothing will come of it. And then now it's actually something probably will come of it,
It's coming,
one way or another, it'll be available to be seen in months. I think there's a few things that still need to be moved around or stuff, but, we'll see.
Provenza was probably like, well, Andy almost died, so I better get on this.
I made two phone calls when I was with my daughter when we got the news of the cancer, and then we're bombed. And then I called up Stanhope and I go, hey, Doug, guess who's got cancer? Ha, ha, it's me, or whatever. And then talk
how'd
to him.
How he respond?
He said, I guess he cried later. But we podcasted about it right away.
Yeah,
it was like pretty raw. You know, I still hadn't really gone, oh, man, yeah, this is really bad.
This is it.
And then I called Provenza, and I go, hey, Paul, how's it going? And he goes, good, good. What's going on? And I go, well, I got pancreatic cancer, and I'm probably going to die here in short order. And he sits, you know, he's going, whoa, you know, bummed out. And then I go, I'm not telling you this as a friend. I'm telling you as a movie maker. I think it got an ending to our picture, which he never come down and filmed any of my, you know, getting surgery or nothing. But it was like, that's a good, you know, as good an ending as you're going to get.
Dude,
it's a sad story. You make your confrontation, you get your revenge. And, you know, sometimes, you know, that happened to Barry Crimmins.
You could script it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happened to Barry Crimmins?
Well, he's a guy, he's a comic, Boston comic, who he was, you know, a victim of the Catholic Church, and he railed against the machine. And Bobcat Goldthwait told his story in a movie that it sounded real similar to what Paul was going to do with this story. And at some point, we were probably making ours, and then we hear, oh, Bobcat's doing almost the same thing. And then that movie came out, and then this guy got married and had, you know, and then died. I was like, that's how long Paul's been working on this movie.
Yeah.
It's another movie, beat him to the gate. That guy's life arc, you know, went from this to dead. So,
well, these movies always come out in pairs, right? There's like Dante's Peak and Inferno. Right. This is the same thing.
Without Limits and Prefontaine.
Yeah, exactly. those would be the same movies. Yeah, you'll write your version of Without Limits.
Yeah, I was. Were you around? You weren't around in those days.
No, I just turned 40.
I was in Without Limits.
No shit.
Yeah, in a restaurant. I'm blurred out. I remember seeing it years ago, and I don't remember being blurred out.
Yeah,
I'm blurred out, but I'm in a scene with Billy Crudup and Monica Potter.
Oh, nice.
I'm playing a guy eating a sandwich.
Oh, nice.
Not minding my own business enough, I guess.
You were looking at him too hard, and they're like, we don't want anyone to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's let Billy run the show here.
Yeah. And it was, I signed autographs as Donald Sutherland, but yeah, it's interesting to look back because it just seemed like it was a really shitty dialogue and boring.
And
it really wasn't that great of a movie. And
Wasn't the Prefontaine? Wasn't that better? I don't know if I've watched both.
I think they both had their compelling points. I mean, Donald Sutherland played the coach in the one I'm in. Hmm. Billy Crudup really looked a lot like Pre.
He's got some.
The difference was Prefontaine. I knew his nephew growing up. I went to school with. I met Prefontaine as a fifth grader. He came.
That's
he was
cool.
Mike's uncle, but the family was vicious with him. This is what I was told. The old man used to beat Pre, and the reason he would take off and run. Well, he would take off running to get away from his family, and he would take off and the family, after he died, owns his whole legacy. So the shit about Prefontaine is all whitewashed, and neither of them told the completely honest story of it. But one of them tried to make him look like, you know, didn't do nothing wrong, and he wasn't a whore. And I can't.
Yeah,
it's probably the one with the one I was in. As an extra was Tom Cruise produced.
Yeah. Tom was in Eugene around that time for some.
I just missed him going into the Downtown Athletic Club.
Oh, damn.
There was a premiere of it, which I didn't get invited for some reason.
It's like, at the McDonald's, man, right?
I was eating a sandwich across the street, hoping they would recognize me. but everybody was hanging out in front where they premiered it at the McDonald's, I believe. And then I just walked around to the side door, or I wasn't like stalking Tom Cruise. I was just heading out for the evening. And then I look back, and that group's doing a tight jaywalk from the McDonald's to the Downtown Athletic Club.
Oh, nice.
I was like, Tommy, why didn't you use my scene, man?
Well, You heard it here. Hot pre-Fontaine Goss from Andy Andrist. He was running from the fam.
Yeah, yeah. And signing autographs in Cottage Grove was where we shot our scene. This is cool because Donald Sutherland was in Animal House.
Yeah.
And they shot on that same street, the parade scene. I don't think Donald Sutherland was there for that. He was not. Yeah. But anyway, I was, it was like the Animal House they shot, and I've seen clips of that, and the yokels, Cottage Grovians, so there's kids that asked me for my autograph. I come from, the movie Lit Up Room, and I had sideburns.
Yeah.
So
it could be a Sutherland.
I've heard from several, two black men, separate incidences that I looked like Kiefer Sutherland to them, but it might be racism. It might be we all look alike.
It could be.
As a black man. But anyway, I would sign autographs, best wishes, Donald Sutherland. I'm like, you're not going to know who I am, so I'm not going to, But Cottage Grove kids light up,
Yeah, like, they love the Sutherlands over there.
Candy or whatever. But I sat in a restaurant for a long scene that was fairly pointless. It was about 30 seconds of the movie.
Right. That's every movie, right? You're in weird clothes and weird places all day to film
scene. And I mean, I went to a makeup chair, and I wanted to be, my idea was, is, why they even had my name on a list was I was trying to be fit enough to be mistaken for a loser college runner.
One of the runners.
I'm not going to be neck and neck with Pree, but maybe he can lap me.
Yeah,
kind of thing. But I
maybe my a beaver.
My audition was, as I just stood with a group of dudes. It was like a PE class, like 8 or 9 dudes, and they were all like, I would cast all for me.
Yeah.
And he walked down. It was, and then a dude walked down, knocked on a door. Robert Towne, he was the director of it. He did Chinatown. Okay. Old man. He looks out of the thing. And then the dude that walked the line or whatever, he goes into the trailer with Robert Towne. We're told to leave. And that's how I got the role, as a guy eating a sandwich. I assume those other guys, got chose for better parts. They're like, just whatever. I got whatever. And those other guys got what I was hoping for, was to be in a Stanford tank top or, whatever. But I just, I was way too old.
You know, I got to give it to you. You look like you could take down a sandwich.
I did. it wasn't a sandwich you could eat neither. So all of it was acting.
Oh my God. You're committed to the craft, huh?
Well, that was, it took Stephen Buscemi to really let me know that I did a Portlandia walk on.
Okay.
And Christine Levine was a regular on there, and she told me Buscemi directed him, directed occasionally. And I was like, really? And then so she invited me to come up there, and I joined a scene that had already been taping. But Louis C.K. was there, and Buscemi, and me and Buscemi. I got put in flip flops, by casting that's what I got put in. I couldn't have name brand anyway. Yeah. So I got in these flip-flops and I'm walking towards the place. I realized I'm going to be in a vape shop. I'm going to go get my hash pen. So everybody's in their places or whatever. And I come walking up and my flip-flop catches and I kick my toe into the curb and I let loose with I probably said fag, whatever. I was, mad at myself. And then the only person out there is Buscemi. So I look and I see Buscemi and he's smiling and I see his fucking crooked tooth. And he goes, that looked like it hurt. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, it did, man. And I'm sitting next to him in the scene and then he's directing it. So, later somebody told me, well, Steven must have liked you, put you right by him.
Yeah.
But we were CK told us he's micromanaging or micro directing the episode. He's doing stand up, but CK is also directing, saying nobody, you know, just laugh and don't talk. So, but he does a bit about, it's not really even a bit, it's a, you know, piano teachers. What's the deal with piano teachers? And both me and Buscemi, and Buscemi's directing anyway, but have been told not to say talk. Or, but we both looked at each other and said, piano teachers, and laughed. I was like, and then, you know, I thought about it and like, wow, I was acting.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing, you know, I was ignoring the director. Buscemi was ignoring the director, and we played off each other.
Proper acting,
yeah.
Well, I'm sure he probably had a soft spot for you, because that's like the most Buscemi type character thing that any Buscemi character would do, is just like kick his heel into the ground. Damn
you fucking dumb motherfucker.
Yeah, that's what he does in movies. He's like, oh, that's my kind of guy. I want to play that guy. He'll play you in the dramatization of the whole shit, man. He can play Andrist. You
know, Levine orchestrated a photo later, you know. So, I felt a kinship with a slouchy guy with kind of gnarled teeth, you know.
Man. He's one of the best. If I had anyone to play my dad in a show, it would be Buscemi. I wrote a TV show for myself in the pandemic, and I was like, Buscemi would be the ideal dad.
Yeah. Oh, man. That tells me a lot about your dad. Do you watch the new Fargo, the new season of Fargo?
I haven't seen this season.
Okay, well, there's a couple of nods to things, but there's a character in the last episode. I thought, oh, man, he reminds me a lot of Buscemi.
Yeah.
And then he gets hit and killed in a similar fashion. And it was definitely, I don't know if it was kin to Buscemi, but it was definitely a nod to that character.
Yeah. Nice. I love
he's
that.
Like a long haired version of him.
I love it. Yeah. Buscemi's awesome. One of the best for sure. Well, dude, I could listen to you talk forever. I'd love to have you on again sometime.
We're scratching the surface here, but we'll hang out somewhere and
have a beer or whatever. I don't. Yeah. I'm honestly not drinking too much these days.
I was. I lost, you know, some of the organs that deal with the booze better, and it's it's just, you know, when I revisit it, it's always kind of a bummer, and I don't get too far into it. It's like,
it just doesn't hit the same way like it has before.
Yeah,
so.
It turns out big alcohol was lying to us.
It's not good for me. It doesn't make me get laid by the pool. Fuck this.
No. All those good times were a lie.
They were a lie. A money-wasting lie.
And, even like I heard James Inman, my friend, is not drinking, but Stanhope drinks way less and lives a healthy life around it. And I think, you know, eventually David tells, you know, people stop drinking because you realize if you could just put it in with a needle, it might be all right. But you got to pour in like a log cabin syrup to get a proper buzz.
Oh, yeah. So much of it. Oh, yeah. Another early unbookable, Tom Rhodes is a mutual friend of, is Tom a friend of yours? You know, Tom?
Yeah. I have
He's a good bud. He came to Korea two or three times when I was living there, and
he did shows. A spiritual, you know, every time I see what Tom's up to, I'm like, you know, I wish I was doing more of that.
And that's how we met when I was living abroad and producing shows and stuff. We had Tom over. He was one of the first guys, and he came back multiple times. He's just a good guy. And he stopped drinking in the time that I knew him.
Oh, yeah. I know the incident, of the incident. I was, I probably was hanging out at Stanhope's with him right, you know, not long before that.
Right.
You know, shithoused.
Yeah, dude. But seeing that kind of shit from some of your favorite comics or buddies or whatever, it's like, oh, yeah, it is important. I've been a maniac for years, for decades. Yeah,
it's a bummer. It's such a common pratfall. I mean, like I said, I would just watch this whole thing about me 10 years ago and reacting to this thing that was a big scar in my life. And, you know, while I'm watching it, I feel like, oh, I need to get a drink.
Dude. Yeah. What was it like watching that?
It was real. You know, I mean, I not only was I watching it, Paul was watching me watch it.
There's so many layers.
He says I can show it to people as long as I don't send it, you know, so like in a place. So maybe I'll figure out a screening, because I'm, you know, to me, it was like watching a, you know, a therapy session and not being able to react because, you know, I didn't want Paul to go, you know, sometime we'll have to revisit that.
Yeah, dude. Let me know if you want to put something like that together. I can also help you with that or whatever. So.
Okay, cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I say your name all the time. I got a cat that I call, you know, Rudy. It's Rue, but we call it Rudy.
Oh, and, nice.
Yeah, I've been wondering, about, you know, it's like, who's this guy Rudy?
I'm nobody, Andy. I'm just a friggin' guy.
We all are, you know. The climate's not going to choose anybody to go. Celebrities, I mean, the celebrities might have a heads up, but we'll all be buried in the same hole.
As a cat guy, the fact that you call your cat Rudy is one of the highest compliments I could imagine. So yeah, I'm happy.
I'm a cat friend.
I purr. Yes. No, I'm a friend to cats as well. That's one of my other areas of interest is cats, for sure. I have a cat.
Yeah, man.
Instagram page.
I would cat farm if it was profitable.
Dude, oh my gosh. I got a handful of cats in a backyard out here. Man.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm
down to one, because I had three at my peak, and you know, they succumbed to the age or whatever, but you know. I would feel like, man, you know, like feeding time, it used to be like I had to put one over here because these two didn't click.
Yeah.
Yeah, pissing match at breakfast and all.
Oh, literally sometimes. Yeah, I'm definitely navigating cats.
He almost made it to 17-year-old Siamese. Dude. Oh,
nice.
He died right here in this room. It was like wonderful. And we had I had a hole pre-dug because I had a feeling, and it was like, thanks for saving us $75 on the way out too.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I hate taking them in where they're nervous and all that too. So it's like, you know, if you could make it easy transition, and he just wanted to do it here.
Mm-hmm. Dude, anyway, here's a downer that I want to leave you with. I read something about what the hardest part for veterinarians is, and they said without a doubt, it's the fact that most people don't stay with their cats when they get put under, and the cat's last thing is looking for their owners.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So if you're not there, you're a fucking monster.
Yeah, yeah.
That is insane.
Uh-huh. I'll be right back.
Yeah, I'll see you, sweetie.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's important to me. I got an old dog. She's right here listening and laying in the heap here.
Hi, pup. Oh, there she is. There. Hi there.
And, you know, she's a old lady and stuff, and I know that time's going to come, and I don't want to be, you know, I got to be here, you know. It seems to me like almost as important as anything with them, but to be there with them when they're checking out, it sucks. It's an emotional thing, but it's also probably, you know, it's something not to avoid in life. Nope. You know?
It's kind of valuable for a family. You know, it's really valuable for a family to learn about death and to see it right there, because it's a part of your life. And it's a part of it. It's like the only thing that connects us, basically.
Yeah,
so.
I learned about it that guinea pigs will freeze up if they're outside when it's freezing. And don't unplug the fish tank.
Those were your early brushes with death.
Casualty events.
Yeah.
Like a family of guinea pigs frozen. That's pretty traumatizing. The babies peeling them off, and
a bunch of piggy nuggets.
Yeah.
Oh, sad.
I learned about death, and if you're, you know, irresponsible like I am, things will die around you.
All right. Well, a couple things before we go. What are you up to? Are you looking to do stuff now?
I'm slowly kind of configuring. I mean, you know, all through. It's like, I'm not one of those people who came out of cancer with a happy or, you know, an upbeat new set on it. I thought, you know, a lot of time it's like, this is, you know, I just need to focus on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So like now I'm on the other side of everything, feeling better. And I'll probably, you know, doing some gigs with Billy Wayne made me think, you know, I should probably, you know, put my energy back. And, you know, I mean, maybe I need to do what I didn't complete with Last Shot and do it better this time. You know, it's, I mean, maybe that's the bitch of this thing is like, you know, it's like trying to be a great golfer. And then you're like, I feel good about that one. And then, you know, nah.
I mean, I bet you could build a base of a solid hour from this, obviously. Like, that's what should come of it from my perspective as a comedy,
fan, a comedy goer. Right. You crushed at that Billy Wayne show.
And I guess, you know, getting, I miss the writing, you know. Yeah. It's like having your mindset into the comedy thing. And, you know, a lot, I do a podcast, you know, like we talked about. So I do that, you know, but it's just in a different format or mm-hmm. whatever, but I haven't gone back and like, okay, you know, I mean, I've been doing that for I've probably done more podcast talking than on stages and stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely over the last few years keeping the comedy sensibility and all that. And, you know, and I feel like I want to go, you know, leave it in a place that I'm, you know, mm-hmm. Happy with or whatever, but that's probably not obtainable anyway. but to go out and be happy about, oh, I'm excited about doing bits and yeah. the love of comedy, you know, it's still there. It's just you know, it's taken a minute to prioritize it again and stuff. So I'll probably, you know, find some things to pop into.
Mm-hmm.
The other night I was booked for something and he didn't put me on the flyer. And mm-hmm. he didn't get back a hold of me, the guy who does the big city. I sent a few messages going, well, I don't think I'm going to head down there. I'm not on the flyer and everything. But he said he sent me a thing through Instagram saying he lost his phone or whatever. So I was like, okay, I mean, you know, but I guess technically I no-showed for a gig, but it's like, you know, I'm not driving down there to be on a loaded show.
Yeah.
If, you know, it's going to surprise people. And the fact he didn't get a hold of me. And all that, but
yeah, I bet, but, you know, that can be a fun show if you want to get, I mean, get a, that's a fun show in town here and
yeah,
there. So.
Yeah. I mean, I was more relieved that it fell out. Cause like, yeah. I don't want to go downtown for something before Christmas and shit.
I get it. Yeah.
But, no, you know, if the right things fell in, you know, I would definitely, do some shows around here.
Love it. Love it. One of the last questions I tend to ask, is if you could tell your younger comedy self anything, like something you wish you knew when you were starting the game, what would it be?
To not worry. Well, I mean, early would be to not worry about the time as much, but that's something I told Features when I was headlining. Mm-hmm. Because I knew that was always a big hurdle for me to think about. Am I doing, I got to do 30 and mm-hmm. the stretch from 23 to, and if you don't think about it and you would do, they would generally do about 27, 28 to mm-hmm. 30, whatever, you know, but yeah. I would just say to me in particular is lay off the fucking drinking as much, because I didn't drink water. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the mistakes you make with drinking, but it was part of my profession, you know, mm-hmm. a part of the thing to separate. So my reputation has always been that I'm, you know, a rowdy drunk, or, you know, what you got to that point, you know, and, you know, it's not like people want to bring you in to go, oh, let's take a chance on this guy. Yeah. You may get too fucking drunk and say some really, you know, shit that we don't. Yeah. I was, wouldn't say horrible shit, but just shit that maybe a small town doesn't want to hear or whatever it would be, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's just like kind of common with comedy. It's like it revolves. It's in a bar and mm-hmm. it revolves around that. A lot of times you get drink tickets or whatever, but, you know, it's
payment.
It's like it's almost like high school and it's unhealthy attitude towards drinking.
For sure. Know? For sure it is.
It's not a good peer group for somebody like me who was already, you know, somebody prone. Who leaned into the alcohol for medication, I guess.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a way to medicate ourselves,
so
connect with
the
others.
Over the years, you know, you can. I would pull it off, or I would have more, you know, of a set in my head. Then I got to where I would just kind of wing it, and then bad habits mixed into that sometimes take, you know, you're not even sure what you're doing, and you've had a couple of cocktails or whatever, mm-hmm. or three or four sometimes, and then it becomes a shit show.
I think we get too like, I can do this on three beers, easy. It's just been a few drinks, it's not a big deal. And then you look back on those sets or whatever, and you're like,
right, I could have done a lot kind better. of a lazy or a shitty work ethic around it, you know.
Yeah,
I would rather be a successful comedian than an underground legend. but life deals you cards.
Don't worry about the time of when you become a successful.
That's the thing that I felt like at least visiting up to the inevitable of thinking about death and stuff is like, what am I going to do about it at this point? And it was kind of a weird comfort zone is to go, you know, what do you, you know, it's like, I can dig in, you know, if I'm going to die anyway, it's like, that's my late, you know, it's already set in stone. So, you know, it's like Doug Singer, it's like life is like animal porn. If it's not for you, I don't even know how that ties in, actually.
Well, it is. If it's not for you, leave it alone. Nice. Well, let's leave it on animal porn. I think that's a great ender.
Misquote.
Misquote one of the greats.
Misquote our way out of this. So good to hang out, sir. Yeah, I get hang out a minute here, right? To wrap.
Yeah, man, that'd be great. Great to hang out. Thank you for being on this. And, I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I hope to see you around town.
I will be. I will be, sir.
And, let's stay in touch, and good luck with other shit going forward.
Like I said, I may need you for a screening.
Yeah, man, I'm around. All right. Well, thanks again, and I hope you don't get cancer once more.
Me too.
Right on, Andy.
Hashtag.
Oh, I tried to push end right there. I just wanted end with you saying hashtag.
I know that now it's like police squad. It's
like hashtag what? Freeze. What was the hashtag?
Remember that they do the freeze up, and then there'd be like a monkey that would walk behind everybody, not moving. Leslie Nielsen was so great.
It's usually my cat. My cat just has bad timing, so whatever. She's not here.
Oh man, one time in the backyard I was podcasting and my cat had dragged a chipmunk. It's like, I can't let my cat kill a chipmunk. I gotta get up and prevent this.
I know. It's kinda heartbreaking when I see a dead bird or rat's head on my doorstep, you know?
Well, chipmunks are, you know, they're if you have a problem with chipmunks or wanna see them come to harm, there's something wrong with you.
There's something. My mom has a bumper sticker that says "I break for squirrels."
That's what our Patreon members, we call squirrels, because the first year or so I was, the squirrels would come up frequently and I would get distracted easily. So they were a part of the show for a minute.
I love it.
Cool, man.
Jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym, not jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym.
With Rudy Tibersi.